start with our recording this morning. All right. So, good morning, everyone. I am Kamala Rampersad De Silva, Chief Executive Officer of the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute. And it is my pleasure to welcome you to this morning's session on how should companies work with financial institutions navigating through the COVID-19 crisis. With a global economic recession predicted following COVID-19, many are concerned about their finances. Directors, if they wish to be truly effective, have to be focused keenly on understanding the changing environment and what disruption or opportunity it may bring to their organization. Today, we have brought a panel of experts together who can help share what is happening with financial institutions and what you as a director or a senior manager needs to know in order to help turn the crisis into an opportunity. However, as I do with all our sessions, and I'm pleased to say we have twice weekly sessions, Wednesdays and Thursdays. So this is our sixth online session since we began on March 19. We hasten to add that COVID-19 has brought unprecedented changes to our business operations and our lives. Although some months have passed since the discovery of the viral infection in China, we are not yet a month away from when it was deemed a pandemic by the World Health Organization on March 11th, 2020. As such, none of us are experts in the present scenario. However, we hope that with collaboration and ongoing dialogue, we can help find solutions and seek opportunities that will minimize the adverse impact on all of us. So just before I hand you over to the panel, I would like to make our regular housekeeping announcements. We would like everyone to remain on mute during the initial panel discussion. You will be invited to make contributions or ask questions by the moderator. There's an icon at the bottom of your screen to raise your hands in order to attract the moderator's attention. You will need to unmute yourself and then press the mute icon again as soon as you are done to minimize any disruptive noises. Given the many participants today, you may also choose to write your comment or question in the chat feature that is located at the bottom of your screen. Our technical support is provided by Christy Johnseller Crouch from SmartServe Limited. Many of you know Christy. We are very pleased that she provides really excellent support for the operations of CCGI. We outsource this service from her. And those of you who are new to this environment and would like to get online support for your Zoom meetings, you can contact her for her expertise. Finally, please note that this meeting is being recorded and that the recording will be sent to you afterwards by Christy. She will ensure also that the recording is available on the CCGI website and available to anyone who may be interested. So, to today's panel, we are very pleased that we have our panel comprises top leaders in our financial sector, and we are very grateful to them for taking the time to share with us today. We are pleased to present to you Mr. Anand Pascal, President of Guardian Life of the Caribbean Limited, Mr. Rupnarayan Umed Singh, Executive Director of Republic Bank Limited, Ms. Donna Wellington, Managing Director of Barbados and Eastern Caribbean CIBC First Caribbean International Bank, Mr. Christopher Lewis, Chief Executive Officer of Eastern Credit Union, and Mr. Elson James, Chief Executive Officer of GMMB Express Finance. I now hand you over to our moderator for this and all our sessions, the Chairman of the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute, Mr. Nigel Romano.
Thank you, Kamala, and welcome to all of you and to the panelists. I want to thank you for agreeing to join us today. We deliberately chose an eclectic group representing the various sectors of the financial services industry. We have our biggest local indigenous bank in the form of Republic. We have a premier insurance company. I'm not sure if it's the biggest, but Guardian Life of the Caribbean. We have Christopher representing the credit union movement with Eastern Credit Union. We have Elson with the consumer finance. And I mean, they've been making some strides in that sector. And of course, we have one of the international banks. And of course, since we are Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute, we want participation from across the Caribbean. And I think we have done very well so far. This is a war. This is a serious crisis. And in any war situation, one has to adjust. For me, transparency is critical. Being upfront, being open, being honest, especially with your bankers, as you would with your priest or your rabbis or your imams. This is a conversation where we're going to hear from the finance experts. I mean, I'm just retired from that sector, but it's going to be interesting, this conversation, I am sure. And so without further ado, I want to put Umaid Roop to open the baton, and then we'll go to Anand. Roop?
I am here.
Yep.
Do you want video? Okay, do you want video as well?
Well, it depends. Let's see how it works, but go ahead if we can try it.
Well, let's try it. If it doesn't work too well, and then we could switch it off just to save some bandwidth. Yeah. All right, so good morning, everyone, and welcome to all the participants, you know, joining us virtually on this session. On behalf of Republic Bank as well, it's really our pleasure to participate in this session and be part of this. I am going to structure my brief conversation, so let's have a brief talk, and then we move across, you know, to the questions after each panel member would have spoken. And first of all, I'm going to look at it really from two aspects. The first one was, what has Republic Bank done so far, you know, to assist our clients? And secondly, you know, what advice should we give to clients, you know, who will be, you know, and who we expect, you know, will be approaching the banks and their various financiers, you know, for assistance as we get through, we attempt to get through to the other side, you know, of this crisis. So first of all, what has Republic Bank done? I mean, as you know, we have a range of customers moving from, you know, very large corporates all the way across, you know, to personal finance and individuals. And basically, I will focus mainly on the SMEs, the commercial and the corporate segment. I know we have other panelists as well who come in on the personal finance side. So I'll leave some of that space for these people. But basically, we actually implemented almost immediately an 8-point plan, you know, and announced an 8 measures, you know, that would provide immediate relief to our customers. And I should say, I mean, one of the things is we did this, you know, fairly quickly as well. The speed of our response, I think, was, you know, fairly important in getting onto our clients and giving them some sense, you know, of comfort as they only begin now to understand at that time the depth of the crisis and the pandemic into which we are facing or which we have found ourselves. So in terms of what we have done, we immediately announced a moratorium on all loans to all customers. And that moratorium will be as long as 6 months. It is a simple matter of the customer requesting a moratorium first, and it would then be done automatically. Some questions have emerged actually as we go through and have interacted with people and customers, you know, over the last 2 or 3 weeks. So what about the interest on interest? What's going to happen at the end of the 6-month period? I would say to our participants is Republic Bank's approach, and I imagine different financial institutions will have different approaches, but we are not compounding the interest. So there will be no interest on interest. At the end of the 6-month period, right, you have two choices. You could come to us and say, I would like my loan, therefore, and the period of payment to be extended by 6 months, in which case your installments that you had prior to the start of the 6 months will remain the same. Or you can say to us, well, here's what. I still want to repay the loan at the in the same period of time, in which case, of course, your premiums or your installments will increase. I think that's very important. Another point I'd want to make is, so what about customers who think they can make it through the crisis and 3 months down the road say, here's what. You know, I realize that I do have, you know, cash flow issues. Then what do I do? Am I still eligible for this 6 month moratorium? And the answer to that question is yes. So whether you come in March or you come in September and you say, here's what, I would still like to take advantage of that 6 month moratorium. At Republic Bank, we will grant you that 6 month moratorium. And I think that's also very important to give the customers the breathing space, well, more than breathing space, really, the space that they will require for their own analysis, which I'll talk more about later on, and the recovery, which clearly they will have to work through and think through in very, very minute detail as if they wish to emerge from this crisis. So that's what moratorium. We also said we will look at debt restructuring. So the second one is debt restructuring on a case-by-case basis. So for many of our customers as well, it's not just a matter of, well, I am not, you know, we're going to allow you to not make any payments, you know, for 6 months. Some customers will require some sort of restructuring of the debt even after that 6 month period going forward. So debt restructuring is another one. We will offer temporary increases in overdrafts and credit card limits, a reduction in merchant commissions for the credit, for some customers. And as you all know, merchants do pay a commission on credit cards, which varies widely depending on the sector in which you're in. And we will be offering our customers a reduction by up to 1%, you know, on these commissions or merchant commissions. We provided as well an automatic waiver of fees, and there are several kinds of fees, late payment fees on credit cards, overdrawn limit fees, that type of thing. There will be no penalties as well. So some customers actually, apart from on the lending side, you know, may have deposits, fixed deposits for or term deposits, who may wish to access these cash flows now. And we have decided that we will allow these customers early withdrawal of these deposits, term deposits, with no penalties attached. We have also put in place reductions on our credit card interest rates. So this will, of course, benefit both personal and corporate and commercial customers. And finally, we have announced a reduction in our prime lending rate by 2.5%, which is actually a substantial increase. I think sometime in the week of the 16th of March, the central bank did announce a reduction in the repo rate by 1.5%, from 5% to 3.5%. And typically in the past, our rates have moved in almost perfect lockstep. So a one-for-one adjustment, either up or down to our prime rate based on the changes in the repo rate. We have chosen to move by more than that decrease in this particular case. And so our prime lending rate is now at 7.5%. So customers, apart from the moratorium, would also have, for those customers, you know, whose rates are tied or loans are tied to prime, for example, customers with overdrafts, you know, would have had an immediate reduction, you know, in their interest expense. And this went into place, you know, almost immediately on the 23rd of March is when we put in place our reductions. So that, in a nutshell, is what we'd have done immediately, you know, for our customers. And I just want to emphasize again, across all customers, corporate, small SMEs, you know, on the personal side as well. So let's go on to what advice should we be giving to customers. I think really we need to look at this in some kind of phases. You know, right now we are in the, many customers might still be in the crisis management phase, but we need to begin, and I think this is important for all customers, to know to begin to lift your heads above the existing situation and begin to look around and see, you know, what should the recovery and my recovery action would look like. We will certainly come to the other side of this, but it will require a lot of very careful planning and execution. Because make no doubt about it, we are moving into a new normal. I know we talked about the new normal, you know, after the 2008, 2009 global financial crisis. But this is also going to be a new normal, if you wish. Things are going to look very different for many companies, you know, as we get out of this, in however long it takes. So there is the current crisis management period, and there's a recovery period. And even the recovery period, we need to talk about how we are going to manage that process as well. One of the things we'd see is a loss of confidence, a general loss of confidence globally. And even the global environment would be impacted. Depending on who you speak to, we're talking about going into a global recession. The numbers vary depending on who you talk to, and whether it's going to be a sort of U-shaped recession or a V, there are varying opinions on that. So therefore, that then suggests, since there's a lot of uncertainty. So two things are coming out, uncertainty, you know, and global recession. Uncertainty into a number of areas, and therefore the management of this uncertainty and the planning for this uncertainty is going to be very, very critical. I mean, speaking to someone yesterday, they mentioned supply chain disruption. That's going to be a major factor facing companies as we go through. Let's talk about the tourism industry as an example. I mean, I think the Caribbean, which is really countries that are largely tourism-based. I think on the tourism side, the hotels have been very fortunate because this crisis hit them towards the end of the peak period. And so you would think, well, maybe the next peak period will start, peak tourism period will start in December. But really, and so therefore, maybe they have enough time to plan for this new peak period. But what is that peak going to look like? If there's a global recession, how would that impact the tourism, you know, sector, the hotels? So therefore, the numbers that you saw and the revenues that they saw for the 2019-2020 peak tourism season should not be expected to repeat themselves, you know, the 2020-2021 tourism sector. In the case of Trinidad and Tobago as well, we have a number of manufacturers who are dependent, you know, whose main market is into the CARICOM countries, you know, the tourism market in the CARICOM countries. And so therefore, even if they can get out of this and supply chains are restored, are they likely to see the revenues and the sales that they're going to have in those markets as you go forward? So I think it's important that we look at the planning is important, the time horizon for that is important, and supply chain, you know, really, because we're seeing as well, some very critical products that people are looking for, customers are looking for, are no longer available on the market. And so you may think you have had those suppliers that existed before, or you think you may be able to go into new suppliers or establish new suppliers, but it's not going to be that easy as we go forward. I'm not sure how much time you allocated to me, Nigel, but maybe I should just probably talk a little bit about the stages as well, as I mentioned. So we're now in the crisis management stage, but we need to begin to move towards a recovery stage. And I think for our customers, then we'd want a clear and concise analysis of your current situation. You know, you need to commence communication with your stakeholders, your financiers, your customers, your employers, and as I just mentioned, your suppliers, because you want to keep your supply chain intact as well as you go forward. You need to develop very accurate and realistic financial, you know, and cash flow forecasts using various scenarios. It's very important, as I mentioned, to continue the conversations with your bankers. Even at this stage, we have had already been reaching out to our customers, and some of them have been having regular dialogues, you know, already with us. I should say that is still the minority, but as we go forward, I would just want to strongly request, you know, that all of our corporate customers, all of your SMEs, you would have relationship managers at various levels within your financial institutions. Begin to reach out to them. And then finally, I'm a little bit mindful of the time. I need to focus on the recovery plan going forward. And in this case, I think we are also a Republic Bank. Would want to strongly suggest that you consider using third-party advisors, technical advisors. Many of these SMEs in particular will need help going forward. In the case of Republic Bank, we actually plan to put in place some sort of, we haven't worked out the details as yet or the mechanics as yet, but certainly some sort of technical advisory team drawing on a number of various professionals across a number of sectors and industries. We have already had initial conversations with the IDB Invest, for example, who will provide technical assistance. There's a range of technical assistance out there. And I think now is the time more than ever where we need to begin to focus and develop, you know, and use that technical assistance as we go forward. And there's a lot more I can say, but I think I will stop there to give the others a chance to join into the debate and the conversations.
Thank you very much, Rube. That was a very good start. I think you hit all the points. Anand, how is the life insurance or the insurance industry generally responding to the challenge?
Hi, good morning, Nigel. Good morning, everyone. Let me also just start off by expressing our gratitude for being invited and the opportunity here to present the Guardian Life perspective. I also want to say thanks for allowing me to be able to wear a shirt again. I think following on from what Rube said, I think that's really a great conversation starter. And we could have this conversation, and I'm also mindful of the time, so I'll try to divide it up into a few various elements. There is the impact that this scenario has had on insurers as a whole. So Guardian Life of the Caribbean, and just for reference, we are the largest in Trinidad and across the region. But what's the impact it has had on insurers in general? And I could speak specifically, but I could also probably share a little bit of an industry view as well sometimes. There's the impact that this scenario has on our clients, mm-hmm. right? And then there's the overall impact that when you take the individual clients together, that collection now creates the economy and the impact it has on financial markets and ultimately how it will filter back down to clients, either the businesses or individual clients. So I'll use that as a little bit of a framework. And you hit the nail on the head when you started and you said that this was a crisis, right? It is a crisis and it should be treated as a crisis. And in a crisis mode, oftentimes the things that you thought about you'd be doing 2 years from now, 3 years from now, those things get relegated to the back burner. And you now have to start to think of windows of, well, what happens in the first 3 months, 0 to 3 months? What happens in months 3 to 6? And then what happens in 6, 12 months and beyond, right? And I guess I could sum it up in a way that says, okay, the initial reaction within the first 0 to 3 months is about business continuity. How has this impacted our business? How has this impacted my business? And how do I continue this business going forward? Thereafter, you can then look at, okay, 3 to 6 months, we're now looking at living in this new normal. So that was a phrase that Rupe had also used. You know, and learning what is your new normal, right? Mm-hmm. Because some of these changes are going to be temporary and some of these changes are actually going to be permanent. And you have to figure out, well, what is the impact this is going to have on my operating models? And then beyond that, you know, talking about business resumption and business resumption in whatever form that becomes. And what we've seen is that the immediate issues really surround immediate cash flows. So from a business that has been operating normally and making certain assumptions and have a X amount of income, that income has gone from 100% to zero. In many instances, mm-hmm. some people have, there's a range in between there. I have personal experiences with people operating restaurants, etc., mm-hmm. and it's zero. There's nothing. There's nothing that can be done, and you can refer to hotels, occupancy rates in hotels, etc., mm-hmm. have dropped to zero. And how do you operate in that environment? So that is, you know, it's very unique to your environment. I can say insurance on the other side, our income hasn't fallen to zero because people continue to pay. Certain sectors continue to operate. There's certain sectors that are actually thriving in this environment. Some manufacturers, and I had a conversation recently with one who produces toilet paper, for example. And I mean, you've seen the memes and the fun about it, but there's a reality to it as well. They are now working 24 hours a day, mm-hmm. right, to produce and supply emergency essential items that the markets demand. So there's some elements within the economy that are going to thrive, some elements that are going to struggle. and you need to understand your own personal business in that regard. In the near future, 3 to 6 months, I touched on it already, you have to reassess your operating models. There are elements of this change that are going to be temporary and some that are going to be permanent. I'll give a live example. We have implemented our business continuity plan, and that triggered to try to get all of our employees being able to work remotely. Mm-hmm. And we've seen it's ramped up slowly over the last 2 weeks. But if you go into one of our offices now, we have a skeleton staff actually manning the office in case any essential service providers come in. But we're able to conduct every transaction remotely. It then begs the question that when we resume a new normal operating normal, someone who's been operating productively in their current environment, am I going to ask them to come go through traffic and then come back to the office again? So maybe the demands for space are going to change in your business depending on the industry that you are in, especially the commercial type activities where remote working is a very feasible option. It'll be different, obviously, for manufacturing entities, but from a commercial side of the business, the financial services sectors and any other service industries, remote working is likely to change your operating model. And then in the longer term business resumption and the new normal, I'm not exactly sure at this point in time, because things change by the day, by the week, by the month, what that will look like in terms of new products and services from the financial services sector. And I'll kind of touch on that in a little bit as I wind down a little. So to wrap those up and to put into the minds of your audience, the directors and the executives of organizations, from an insurance perspective, the key questions to take back to those businesses are really around, how do I relate? What are the insurance concerns and how are the insurance markets developing? So like Group, and like Republic Bank, we have also put in place certain processes that help alleviate some of the immediate cash flow needs. We've extended the grace periods on our policies so that especially policies that haven't been able to build up sufficient cash values so that they won't lapse. And people could still enjoy the benefit of their coverage. And when we get hopefully to some sort of resumption of normal activity in the next 6 months or so, then we will work with our clients to figure out how do their policies continue to operate thereafter. We have a small mortgage book, I think compared to the size of the banks out there, but we've extended moratoriums very similar to what the initiatives at Republic Bank have done. And our clients have that same access to a moratorium on mortgage payments, etc. Mm-hmm. So we've put in place a number of measures to help support our clients. And as a director and officer of a small to medium enterprise or a large enterprise, you need to assess what are your concerns. What are the concerns of your business? And particularly around employee benefits. You know, how are employees going to operate? How if you have to shut down your operations, what do you want? What do you expect of them? What do you expect of them to be able to manage their cash flows if they're not generating any income? How do you pay? But health concerns are certainly something that are going to be top of mind of any employee. So what is the organization's view of health benefits, group life benefits? Another concern is, has the organization considered key man insurance? Mm-hmm. So succession planning in a time like this, when you're in a crisis, you need to make sure that your key people, should something happen to them, that's part of your business continuity planning. So how is the organization geared towards key man cover to make sure the business is able to run and operate subsequent to this scenario? I'm not the general insurance expert, but I can touch a little bit on it. A big part of your business is also general insurance, keeping your assets protected. You know, sometimes it might be you might be tempted to say, well, okay, let me cut this insurance expense to manage cash flows. But then the impact of a peril, a fire, we're not in the hurricane season, so thank goodness for that. But if you cut your insurances now and we end up in the hurricane season, especially people who operate in the broader Caribbean region, you're now exposing yourselves to another risk. There's also something that I've been chatting a lot as well recently within the group, especially for commercial enterprises. Now that we have this remote work from home capability, the increased exposure to cyber risks, mm-hmm. right? And there's an increasing in this last month, these last few weeks, you've seen an increasing incidence of cyber attacks coming from some of the usual suspects around the world. So those are the kinds of things that people also need to consider from their business concerns. I'm going to wind up here and I'll be open to questions later because I'm mindful of the time as well. But this whole thing just really boils down to proper financial planning in the midst of a crisis. Did you have adequate cash buffers to be able to allow you to survive a period if your income falls dramatically? And then what other financial planning elements do you put in place to move forward from there? So Nigel, back to you.
Thank you very much, Anand. That's very good perspective. I'll take it over to Donna Wellington because she has a hard stop at 10. Donna, what's CIBC, FCIB's perspective? And maybe you can give us a Caribbean-wide perspective.
Certainly. Good morning, everyone. And again, thanks for the invitation to join this panel. I'm just really going to continue on from what was said from Republic Bank because the approach certainly is very similar. For those who don't know us very well, CIBC First Caribbean is in 16 countries. And so therefore, as I'm speaking, I'm talking about all of those 16 countries and our approach as a general perspective as to what we did. Certainly, this is an ongoing situation. And not only do we have 16 countries, but our network is also, we also have 10 regulators. So it is trying to ensure that while we do what we do, it is also in line with all of the regulatory frameworks that exist and making sure that where exceptions were required to be able to do certain things, that we got those on time to be able to support our clients. So what have we done so far? We have done very similar things to Republic Bank. I think most banks in the region have and provided 6-month payment holidays and on credit cards, 3 months credit card relief from payments and any overdraft over excess fees and that sort of thing. We are also providing working capital lines and overdraft lines and any other overdraft lines to our customers as well. How we've looked at this, and unfortunately, because we are in 16 countries, we are very, very familiar with crisis management. But generally, when we're dealing with crisis management at a national level, it is usually because there's been devastation due to a hurricane. What this feels like for us is a 16-country hurricane, a worldwide hurricane, really, and one where, you know, the same crisis management that we apply to Dominica when it was devastated is now required for all of our territories in order to support them. So the support is specific. The support is therefore a situation where we have to look at all of our constituents. Governments are a major constituent of our bank, as well as the whole corporate arena, from large conglomerates down to the business banking, small business one door shop, and also the individual customer. We also have to look to support vulnerable industries. So I picked the top five, really. Hospitality, oil related, because we are in Trinidad as well, and Curacao. Medical and Aruba, medical in institutions, because they have been deeply impacted. There's no real, all doctors and dentists and so on, their practices have all been impacted by this crisis. Then the retail and distribution, they're the ones that are doing quite well in this space. However, they do need specific support, as well as infrastructure. So air and seaports have also been deeply impacted. A lot of our lending is to this sort of infrastructure type related. And as you know, with the stoppage of flights in many of the territories, what's happened there is that all of the payments that they were accustomed to getting have all dried up, very similar to the other industries. So when we look at those, there are different ways to support during this crisis. Some of them are using, and I'll speak first about hospitality. In hospitality, the extent is devastating. There are some hotels who had planned CapEx for this period and had planned to close in April and start that CapEx. They're using this as an opportunity where once it is safe to go outside again, at least for outside workers, they are going to be able to go back to work and start construction so that they work towards capital expenditure and making sure that they come out of this on the other side when we are able to come out of it stronger and certainly more fit for purpose. With respect to those who have not done anything and have shuttered, we certainly are offering that expertise to be able to support them both now and ongoing, because we do recognize that even if we are cleared for reopening and people go back to work, that the folks that come are coming from countries which may not be in the same situation. And so therefore the lag time may persist quite seriously. And in our territories, the central banks and other economists have done a lot of the work to see where we could actually end up with this. And the prognosis is not good in any mm-hmm. situation. So the lead time for hospitality may be quite long and support may be required for much longer than 6 months. But wherever that is possible, and we do understand, we will need both the support of, we will need to support our hospitality industry, but even more so, we will need the support of our regulators to ensure mm-hmm. that we are not offside with respect to their usual prudential mm-hmm. Situations right, where we are not putting ourselves in harm's way because we have protracted a situation too long. So with respect to oil related industries, whilst this is not usual, this is not in my patch per se, we are looking to support where possible. And similarly, we would look to see what the situation is with those industries and how, if they are improving or declining based on the protraction of this. Even the fact that the airplanes are not flying means that their revenue has also reduced. And also, I can touch in at this point around foreign exchange. Now, foreign exchange is a massive problem with respect to hospitality and mm-hmm. and oil-related industries not being up to full clip. When you think of hospitality, a lot of the ways that we get foreign exchange in many of our countries is through the IATA payments that come from the airplanes. And their operations, as well as the hospitality, which you can see the dependency between the two. So with those two drying up, we also have to look very, very carefully at how we spend our very scarce US dollars in many of our instances. In my patch, whilst we have this major concern in Barbados, it is not as a major concern in the Eastern Caribbean. And we also are looking at places like Bahamas, where the government has basically, and the central bank is saying that they expect a 40% decline in US dollars over there. So, you know, across the region, this is really a deeply impacting situation. And when there's scarcity of US dollars, then that impacts imports. which also impacts the retail and distribution. So you can see they're very much intertwined and interdependent. And so as long as this crisis persists, we can see how this can really deeply impact most industries. What we are trying to do, though, is try to make lemons out of lemonade. And I don't want you to think that there's nothing good coming out of this. With retail and distribution, where we are is trying to support, and this is, I'm the president of the Bankers Association here in Barbados, and the government has had to try to do very innovative things with our retail and distribution system to ensure that persons stay safe, but at the same time, there is ability to access product. And so a lot of what we've done is take the supermarket industry and the distribution industry outside, offering curbside as well as this delivery in order for people to pay, because we, you know, cash is not the best thing in this environment. We are also supporting a lot of mobile terminals and making sure that people have the capability to take their business on the road and to allow for payment. So we are supporting, I would say, the whole infrastructure for payments in this way. On top of that, we are using this as an opportunity for digital transformation. From the government, we had pushed this for a while and are trying to push a lot of our government payments, be they pension, welfare, national insurance payments, whatever, sick leave, whatever they are, pushing those payments towards different modalities rather than checks. And so we are really driving that agenda with our governments first, but also with our corporates, because what this crisis has shown us, when the banks are closed, people still need access to their money. And most people have the cards, but the challenge is that if you don't have, if your employer is not paying you using the modalities that allow you to get your money digitally, then you are stuck. So this is, we're asking that individuals press their employers, but we're also asking our clients who are corporates to convert very quickly. Because as they come to us and they bellyache about the fact that they're not able to use the deposit feature on the ATM machines or anything like that, we are driving them to see, you know, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to pay your suppliers? Pay them digitally. Mm-hmm. Are you trying to pay your employees? Pay them digitally. Are you trying to receive money? Receive it digitally. So what are you trying to do that requires a check? And pushing them towards those modalities. And we are trying also to make sure that people in general do the same. And we do have the capability in most of our markets to transfer bank to bank to bank. And we are encouraging individuals in country to use those systems as well. And certainly even the payments of bills and so on, all of those things can be done digitally. And we are really pushing that digital agenda. We have seen remarkable pickup in that since that has happened. And what we have been pushing for and pressing for with our clients, the transformation is amazing. And I say that even with respect to pensioners who have been the hardest nuts to crack. But when they recognize that you know, the checks that they prefer to go in the bank and cash because they can touch it and feel it, that they don't want to go into the bank because of safety reasons and health reasons, and also they want access to their money, they have signed up quickly, and the government is supporting us with respect to them signing up quickly. So we expect to see significant movement in that regard. So that's all I really want to say, the points I really want to touch on. We want to help our clients build capacity where necessary. We want to support governments practically. And we want to make sure that the governments are able to clearly indicate that persons, be they businesses, government themselves, or individuals, there is stability in the country because we allow for financial systems to continue to operate. Because the apart from food, the one thing that people will riot over is if they don't have access to their money. So we are trying to make sure that we, in every way, support that agenda, because we see ourselves as extremely important with respect to that. The one thing I will mention before I stop is that the other area that is critical is to understand that we are not out of the woods. We are rolling up to June. And whilst in Trinidad, this is not usually a problem for you, the rest of us with the hurricane season coming up, we have not taken our eye off the ball. And so I'm heartened to hear what's happening with the general insurance side of things. But we are also gearing up for the fact that this is the first thing that we have to deal with this year. And we do not know what is coming. So we are looking forward, but we are also, you know, keeping our eye very much on the hurricane season and drought conditions, because both of those are a problem.
Thank you very much, Donna. That was excellent. And I like your focus on the digital transformation, and hopefully we'll get into the conversation about that. And let's move it over to Christopher. Christopher Lewis, tell us about what the credit unions are doing to help their members. And I suspect a lot of your members are definitely either individuals or SMEs, the doubles vendors and the barbers and the hairdressers and that kind of stuff. So unmute and let's go. Unmute, you're on mute. Yeah, there you go. Go ahead. Still not hearing you.
Okay, you hear me now?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, great. Well, I'll get right to it. Thanks again, Nigel, for the invitation and the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute for inviting us to this platform. Of course, we represent Eastern Credit Union, which is one of the largest credit unions in the country. This COVID-19 has been a shot out of the dark, which has impacted all businesses and financial institutions in very unexpected ways. I would say, though, at Eastern, we were tracking it. So since December, when it first appeared in China, into January, I was seeing where following up on the news where it's happening all over the world. And once it hit the Caribbean, I think it was the Dominican Republic about 2 weeks before it hit Trinidad as a case, we pulled the management team together to say, well, hey, this is coming, because if it's in the DR, it will be in Trinidad. We have direct flight links and so on. So let's prepare, let's start to look at all the scenarios. This is a very unusual scenario for us because, as one of the speakers before mentioned, we are accustomed to hurricanes and maybe earthquakes. We haven't planned for a pandemic. So this was new territory, but it helped us in terms of awareness and sensitization of the management and the staff as to what changes might be occurring. That said, this hasn't been all negative. So while most businesses are impacted through loss of customers, as was referenced, higher operating and capital costs, et cetera, some like supermarkets and pharmacies, and as I think Anand mentioned, some manufacturers are benefiting from increased customer traffic flows as the consumer spend pivots from entertainment and eating out to healthcare and eating in. So it's a change in the customer dynamic, at least for the next few months. At Eastern, you reference our clientele in terms of business are more the SME level clientele, and we will be forming our business center, which we have set up and we'll be launching shortly once this crisis is over, to cater to the needs of the SME clientele in particular. I would advise businesses navigating their way through this crisis to keep close to your credit union and your bankers, as was mentioned previously. This is the ideal time to share your experiences. What we've done at Eastern, too, we've looked at the sectors who are likely to suffer most, maxi taxi drivers, for example, people in the personal care industries like barbers, hair salon, where you have to be close to your clients. And we are reaching out to them to say, hey, how are things going? Do you have any issues? Come, let's have a conversation. So it's a question of working in partnership with our customers or our members to ensure that we get through this together. The credit union movement, and I would say all financial institutions, will be willing partners who understand the pain of our customers and your concerns, and we stand ready to work with you. Common solutions, as referenced by Republic Bank and earlier, including waiver of payments, as well as at Eastern, we've created some new loan products, which will have a deferred payment schedule. So you may access a new loan today, but you will have up to 3 months before you actually start paying on that loan, which would allow the businesses time for their cash flows to recover, or they may have an immediate cash need that they need to access financing in order to do so. But in every crisis, there's a silver lining. The silver lining in this case is that COVID-19 affords us the opportunity and the time to rethink our business model. How can we better serve our customers and be more resilient to the next shock? The answer for many, as was mentioned by Diana, will be in creative and adaptive use of technology. Your shopfront may be closed, but the internet is open for business 24/7. For the placing of orders, for delivery, even if that is delayed by a lockdown, for interacting with your customers through social media. That's important. So the doors may be closed, but that doesn't mean to say you can't talk to your customers and see how they're going and see how you could help them and get ideas from them. How much more information can our customer gain from us online versus coming into a store office when they may be just coming in on a lunchtime? So they could be a lot more engaged. But are we fully ready for this online space? This webinar, for example, is testimony to a change in dynamic. Normally, for a seminar, you have to book a meeting room, hire caterers, sub system to deliver quality product, and so on. Most companies have adapted to work from home as a standard policy, VPN networks, virtual private networks, virtual meetings. After COVID-19, there's no reason to go back to what it was before, because this is showing to be very efficient. Instead, we should accelerate as we use technology to lower costs, increase efficiency, improve customer service delivery, and give us that added distinguishing value to the customer. And what that does in effect is that we become more resilient to future shocks that may come because we are operating at a lower cost model and a more productive model. This enhanced use of technology may include creation of a mobile app, online ordering, as we've seen in one of the major supermarket chains, curbside pickup, digital kiosks, which we'll shortly be introducing at Eastern Credit Union to handle routine transactions, virtual sales calls, et cetera. So for example, I've told my credit team, why does a member have to come into a branch to access a loan? Everything in my mind can be done online. Mm-hmm. At a distance, it is simply, unless it's a very complicated type load where you want that face-to-face interaction, for 90% of the loans that could be done online. In 1918, which was the last year of the world pandemic, there was no internet. Information, as well as business supply chains, were limited. In 1972, which is the most recent case for Trinidad, where we had the polio outbreak, then some of you remember, there was again no internet and widespread access to technology. It's different for us in 2020. We are more knowledgeable. We are better able to analyze options. We are better able to learn from others. We feel more connected in the world, even though this crisis is happening now. And we can better strategize recovery because we're sharing from others. So while we do so and introduce new technologies, it is important though to remember not to leave the customer behind, because as we've heard from previous speakers, there's an innate sort of reluctance to embrace new technology. It may be a cultural attribute, but it's something we have to recognize, and we cannot assume automatically, because technologically speaking, it is possible that the consumer will embrace it. We have to educate them, and that education is key to successful adoption of new technology. So my advice here then is to be patient, to develop easy to use systems that the customers can easily understand, and explain it to your customers in simple terms to overcome whatever cultural barriers that may hinder full adoption. As part of the resilience strategy, businesses should also consider diversification, which could be vertical, horizontal, or totally in a new direction. But to be successful at it, it will require detailed market analysis to determine where you can best add value, be competitive, and where it is a natural fit with your skill set. So in closing, a key supporting tool for any business at this time would be quality data analysis of our customers, of the product movements and margins, of buying trends, of whatever is relevant. And because we have the technology, most of the time the information is available. Let's take the credit unions, for example. We know exactly who our 200,000 members are.
Just 1 minute, Chris. Let me just thank Donna. She has to drop off. Donna, thank you very much for a very engaging conversation. And this will be recorded, so if you want, you can access it afterwards. Have a great day and be safe.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Donna.
Okay, Chris, wrap up. You can continue to wrap up.
Sure, no problem. So I was referring to quality data analysis as key going forward, because that will enable you to accurately analyze trends, to develop a predictive model for your business, and serve as a guide to determine where to invest and how to deploy your limited resources in for the best return. And that's about sums it up for me.
Thank you very much. I mean, I think, again, the importance of working with clients and also working with them through the immediate crisis, but also helping them to set up for the new digital world is very important. And I know Elson is very much involved in that digital world. Elson, talk to us.
Hi, morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Everyone hear me clearly?
Yep.
Okay, good stuff. Well, one, thanks for the invitation. I feel, you know, quite privileged to be around, even though it's virtually, this panel. So it's good to share. Two, just like Anand gets to wear a shirt, I get to cut my own hair. Prior to this, I was sporting a big afro. Which actually made me call my barber to ask him how he's going, because as you were pointing out before, there are some people that's feeling it a lot more than others. From my perspective, coming in both from JMMB as well as the JMMB Bank and the Express Finance side, we are seeing massive change, and then it's simply an understatement. So for me, my 2 cents is simply for the directors and the executives, I'm going to tackle it from your team members or your employees' standpoint. And for me, in directors and executives trying to figure out, just as Anna was speaking about earlier, what's my short term and medium term and long term? And in that short term, most of us are in survival mode. Quite a few companies are making decisions on the survival mode to determine whether that means their team members are going to stay on, whether that means their team members or employees will have to take vacation, take half pay, or whatever it means to really lock down that cash flow. From the lender standpoint, both from consumer finance and overall lending, my advice would simply to be, in the same way that you are operating your business, in being in touch with your bankers, I'm sure all of these entities and companies that are on, there is a discussion with your bankers to say, hey, these are the loans that we have. Here's the deferrals that we want to do. You know, I would ask that you think of your team members and your employees as well. Some financial institutions like Republic Bank are doing an automatic on your loan. If you have a loan, fully deferred. Some institutions are not. Some of them are saying, hey, talk to us. You have to request it first, and then we'll do the deferral. From a JMMB perspective, it's a call in and it's automatic. But what we're asking is, there are quite a few people, there are a lot of individuals at different levels of education that simply may not know what a deferral is. And they may not understand the ramifications of not paying a loan. So they may say, well, I got let go from my job. I know I don't have to call the bank to tell the bank that I do have a job, and therefore I'm not requesting a deferral, or I'm not joining that line to go inside to speak to the bankers and so forth. And then because there is no conversation between the bank and the employee, 6 months later, 9 months later, it shows up on their TransUnion as, you know, non-payment. And it follows them, unfortunately. So even as companies start to figure out what they're doing from a survival standpoint. I would ask, you know, think of your team members as well. Even if you do have to send employees home for the time period, give them a letter, let them and speak to them and say, hey, you know, send this to the companies that you have loans to. Let them understand the situation that you're in so that there can be deferral. And understand a lot of your employees will have loans, not just at financial institutions, right? We have courts, we have Island Finance, we have Standard, we have many other lending institutions that your employees will have loans for. And now that there isn't a salary, they would need to have that deferred so that a year from now, when we do look back and we laugh at COVID and say, guys, you remember when we had to do everything and so forth and so forth. This doesn't follow them as a stain.
Mm-hmm.
So in the short term, my first advice is make sure that you communicate with your team members as they are going home in whatever form or fashion. Arm them with information so that they can go to their bankers. Let them know, guys, call your bankers, call your hire purchase people and let them know that you're not working. Let them defer their loan. So give them that advice. And so that it makes sure that when we do turn the corner, everyone is pretty much at the same level, hopefully at the same level that we're at. That's the short term. And then on the medium term, and again, the medium term can simply be defined now, just how things are going. It could be in May. May seems medium term from where we are now. But in the medium term, as you start to evolve your business, I think many of us are seeing the benefits from working from home. Use this opportunity to identify what are the areas of your business that you couldn't access from home or access remotely, and what do I need to put in place to be able to access those things remotely so that the business can continue. As Christopher was pointing out earlier, I think most of the financial institutions would have some form of an online platform. I'm very proud to say at Express, we have a full virtual online platform. So you can apply, you can go from application to disbursement from your couch. And I think that's some of the leverage that all financial institutions will be looking at going forward. How do we ensure that a client can access a lending product or access a deposit product, open an account without having to come into the branch? But the flip side of that is for the employers. Most of what we require from an AML standpoint, both from the central bank, both locally and regionally and internationally, what we require requires information from the employer to open an account, to take a loan. We need job letters, we need payslips, not just for our credit underwriting, but we also need it for, as I said, for AML compliance. How do I provide my employee that information without the employee having to come to an HR in the office? Many times it just means me as a banker being able to make a phone call. Can your phone calls be forwarded to a home? As simple as that. So when I do call your company, it's forwarded to the HR person at home, and that person has access to some form of database that they can verify that, yes, Nigel Romano is working for us. He's working for $10 an hour. He has been with us for 20 years. And therefore, we can move forward, open an account, do a loan, and facilitate your employees without the need for that. I have to be in person. I need to have that document. So for me, it's a combination of one, the financial institutions, the credit unions, the insurance companies, working very hard to make the entire process as virtual as possible. Can we do everything, or at least 95% of what we can do with the client not being in our branches? And then two, can it be facilitated halfway by the employer? There's information that I would need. Can you be able to send that to me, or even access a phone call in a virtual manner? Mm-hmm. So that's in a nutshell for it for me. It's one, as you move forward, just ensure that your team members and your employees, we're still human. That if they have to, unfortunately, go home, provide them with the information so that they too can leverage some of the deferments. And I think the larger lesson after all of this is that I think there is absolute need on the employee side and on the individual side for better financial planning. Mm-hmm. And as we come out of this, I would encourage all employers, all companies, there are many financial institutions, many individuals who offer financial planning, who offer budgeting. Invite them in for a talk to your employees so that we do have this 2 or 3 month put aside, you know, people call it a little kakada, keep it on the side, so that we have that in place. So that in the when we do face another COVID in whatever form it may be, COVID or hurricane or something, our employees also have something to go back to through proper planning. Because what we do see is we see a lot of individuals highly levered, a lot of debt, and they're now starting to understand, you know, what the problem is in having debt. It's all well and fine when you're working, but if you're off for a week or off for 2 weeks or off for a month, it puts a lot of strain. So you know, I think it's going to be collaborative going forward. We really have to leverage the technology. That's it for me.
Thank you all very much. I mean, I think we touched all the bases. So I will start, and then any questions, you can raise your hand or just unmute and or raise your hand, and then I will call on you, and then you can ask your question. But the question I have for all of you is how many of your SMEs and even the bigger entities, well, let's keep it to the SMEs because the bigger ones should be in good shape. But how many of the SMEs know their customers, have a digital connection with their customers? In other words, have their mobile phones, their email addresses, their WhatsApp, their Instagram, and all that kind of stuff, so that you can, in fact, interact at that level. And the other one is, how many of them understand where they are and are sitting down and looking for ways to navigate out of this crisis? Credible ways that you all can have a real conversation with. So I'll start with that, and then I'll shut up and open it up for questions.
All right, I guess I could take it first. I think, so when you refer to the SMEs, you refer to our clients that are SMEs.
Yes.
And I can use us as an example, but it'll apply to the answer as a whole. It really does depend on your industry and depends on where you stand, because we are an organization that ultimately has roots that go all the way back to 1847. We have clients who are on our books that have policies that started 30 years ago. Okay? Now, 30 years ago, we weren't collecting a cell phone. number or an email address or anything like that. So, but policies that came on our books last month, we will have that relevant information. So it's just that the evolution of your portfolio, the evolution of your customer profile might have what we consider legacy data. And I think it was Donna who spoke about earlier about adoption rates and getting people to start to adopt more digital ways of operating. It's a mixed bag. What we can say within the Guardian Group is we made a concerted effort over the last 2 years to really capture that data, to be able to communicate with our clients. And I think the impact that you see today shows that effort is bearing fruit, because a lot of our transactions in the last 2 weeks have been digital. So we are able to. So it really, it's the question of the SMEs and the industry that will determine how that occurs. What I've seen, you know, when you interact with certain restaurants or certain places, you're going to pay and they'll ask you for an email address. They'll ask you to provide a number. So that effort has increased. And I think that will certainly in this social media digital age, particularly among the younger demographics, they have no problem sharing that data. They have no problem sharing the information. So they've definitely learned how to communicate digitally and communicate with the businesses that they want to communicate with. So it's going to be a little bit of a mixed bag, depending on where you are and how you move forward.
So Nigel, we have a hand up from one of.
Yeah, I saw a hand up from Crystal, but let me just get either Rup or Chris or Elsie, and then I'll go to Crystal.
Nigel, I'm trying to figure out how to use the hand up.
You have to, if you click on participants at the bottom of your screen,
right,
you will see a panel comes up on the right hand side of your screen with all the names, and at the bottom there is a raise hand.
Oh yes, I'm now seeing it. All right, after all right. Getting over that technological hurdle. No, this has been a mantra of mine from day one since I joined Eastern last year, as you know. Mm-hmm. Internet data, everything depends on data. Our membership, when they join, we ask for that information. But traditionally, we may not have been as diligent as we should be in collecting the actual data. So my strategy now is to provide incentives for persons to share the information. Mm-hmm. So we have an online, for example, newsletter, but we're not printing the newsletter anymore. You want to subscribe? Well, could you share your email address and your cell number with me? We're starting webinars at the Eastern Credit Union. And to register for the webinar like this one, I need your email address and I need your cell number. Mm-hmm. So that is what is working for us in the main, because we try the traditional way of like having a promotion and you can win a trip to somewhere when you complete it and give us the information. That doesn't really work. And that has been the industry experience when we talk to business partners at Unit Trust. And so the uptake is not that high. But if people have an incentive to share the information they will. But it is only when they share it and you have it, then you could communicate directly with them. So I agree with you 100%.
Thank you.
Just a 2 seconds. I don't know you have a hand up. But
yeah.
I mean, in some cases, I guess our business is a little different because it is consumer finance. But some of them, I had a mentor that used to say, this is Pat Bishop, and she used to say, until all have crossed, none have crossed, and some will have to carry. And what we did is we really pushed the envelope on the sum that we'd have to carry, right? So we said, in order to apply for a loan, you had to provide an email address. It was mandatory. If you don't provide an email address, you can't get a loan. And what that did was that a lot of the elder citizens that were accessing loans for us, we actually coached them through creating an email address and empowering them. So it wasn't that it's not a walk in the park, but it does take some time. But what that means is that all clients, all my entire database, we have an email address for you because it was mandatory, but it did take some coaching and it did take some hand holding going forward. And then of course you get the benefits of it now. Because of course we can email everyone. They're sending contracts out and they're electronically signing. People who didn't have email addresses are now literally electronically signing loan contracts and sending it back. So I think it really is on us to push the envelope and really empower our team members as well as our customers.
Thank you. Crystal, unmute and ask.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Crystal
Good Leeds, morning.
Guardian Group, my president is here.
Right.
this is a really good conversation. And I think most of us are really excited about the conversations about innovation and the digital interface and the services. But the question that I have, and I think I would have liked to hear the perspective of the regulator in all of this. Now, I think it was Elson who said, you know, medium term might be May. And this may be a more long-term question. How, because this industry is so heavily regulated, because we're talking about financial services, how are we having the conversations with the regulators about these digital interfaces? Because we still have obligations with respect to suspicious activity reporting and the entire AML-CFT framework. So I would have liked to hear what was the regulator's perspective on some of these things that may or may not happen in the long term, but in the interim, is there a commitment, for example, from some of the leaders and those who are the panelists to have that conversation or to start the conversation? Because, I mean, we can't at this point to make things more accessible compromise the AML CFT strength that's been going on for quite some time. So that's the question.
Crystal, I will start by letting you know that I know that there are existing initiatives using distributed ledger technology, blockchain technology, to capture the digital identity of most participants in the financial services sector, so that, and then centralize that data. And given the distributed ledger technology, given that it's a distributed ledger and you have the controls in place, once that data is captured, then it can be shared and shared quickly for a small fee. The point is that it makes the regulation and the compliance a lot more efficient and a lot more effective. So that's the thinking right now as to how we'd approach that. But for me, it's a huge opportunity. The other opportunity I see is that the problem we're going to encounter in the short term is getting the cash, or getting the funds, I should say, to the people who need the funds, and getting it to them quickly so that they can buy food and that kind of stuff and whatever else they have to do. And the government has put in place their rent program, their salary program for the various sectors, and their support programs. The question is, how fast is that money getting to the people, and what are the controls around ensuring that it gets where it's supposed to get as quickly and efficiently as possible? Because there will always be somebody trying to take advantage of the system. And again, the digital transformation, mobile technology, distributed ledger technology, to capture the information, make sure that information is sound in a database, and therefore quickly being able to push out the funds, and knowing that those funds get to where they're supposed to get to without any concern as to middlemen and that kind of stuff. So for me, it's a huge opportunity. And I think, again, I have said it repeatedly, we cannot waste this crisis. This crisis is an opportunity for moving very fast into the 21st century. I see Chris has his hands up. Christopher.
Thanks. I'd just like to add to what you're saying, Nigel. There's a FinTech Association of Trinidad and Tobago, which is in formation. Mm-hmm. That spearheaded by the TTIFC, the International Finance Corporation, which is, of course, is under the Ministry of Finance. And I'd just like to say that from the beginning, the central bank has been a deliberate invited party to the conversation. Central Bank, the SEC, and some of the other players that are dealing with the AML CFT concerns. So while the blueprint is not yet ready, but we're in the process of developing a strategic plan, and all those governance issues naturally would be part of those discussions. But for further information, I can suggest that you contact the TTIFC, who are taking the lead in getting it undergoing, with the blessing of their line minister.
Anand, your hand was up.
Yeah. I just wanted to also add a question around the regulators. I think the regulators in the region have generally been proactive. They've reached out to us very quickly to ask about plans and what we put in place. So they looked at it first and foremost from a business continuity perspective. There's the financial impact as well, so stress testing. So those requests have also come in. So there is some movement there. What I can also share is that I've been following very actively in terms of how, you know, because fortunately in our circumstance, there's a bit of a time lag. There's a time lag between when things happen in global markets versus when they arrive on our doorstep. That time lag has been shrinking over time.
Mm-hmm.
But So this insurers in Asia have been dealing with this scenario for 3 months, a little bit more than 3 months. And we've been looking and having interactions with other entities that provide us insights. And you've seen that the regulators have been proactive as well on that side of the world. And I can say that for us, you know, we've seen simple things come on quickly. The central bank has issued guidelines around how to interact with them digitally. So first and foremost, we are all human and we're all part of a wider society. So this is impacting every layer within the economy, within the globe, within the population. And some of the things that are the learnings we could take from the Asian insurer experience is, and one very powerful thing that came across to me is that speed wins. You know, be pragmatic, but move quickly. Mm-hmm. Stay in touch with your clients. Contact your have our sales representatives should be contacting their clients regularly. Mm-hmm. Keep in touch. Talk to your regulators. Talk to your bankers. Put in place those digital things. They may not necessarily be perfect as long as you don't compromise cybersecurity, etc. But you need to move. And then as you start to move, then the next thing you do, you continue to fix in flight. And but once you keep moving, you then realize that in May, as Elston put it, you'll be in a totally different place from where you are today. And then you could start to build and plan thereafter. But the regulators, I think, are being a little proactive. And we just have to continue to work with them like we have to work with everybody else in order to keep moving this process forward.
Thank you. Roop, you had mentioned that I'll come back to you just now, Elson. I just want to add, Roop, you had mentioned about having advisors working with your clients. You want to expand a little bit on that?
Yeah, so are we talking here about having, you know, technical advisors work with our clients? I mean, at the end of the day, we have a huge cadre of people in the financial sector with a lot of experience who I think we should be able to call on, you know, to provide assistance, particularly to those who need it. And I think the companies that will need this will be those in the financial, the SMEs in particular. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For example, at Republic Bank, we have a cadre of retired general managers, you know, corporate managers who would have interacted with customers in various sectors. So they have the sector information, you know, they have the financial background. So they would be able to provide assistance to some of these customers in building their business plans and, you know, and doing that detailed sort of cash flow analysis that will be required at this time. But apart from that, so apart from the financial side, you know, we also talking to the IDB in particular about working with us and providing technical assistance in other areas as well. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit early days as well, but so one of the questions could be, well, who's going to be at the cost of all of these things?
Yeah.
And this is an area that we are now beginning to work, but we are pretty sure that we will be able to provide, and we will be looking at providing some kind of assistance and subsidy as well, you know, in terms of working with these customers. This is going to be critical, very critical for these customers, you know, to move beyond this crisis stage into the recovery plan and the recovery phase that they will need and have to move towards.
Okay, thank you. Elson, you had raised your hand.
Yeah, no, just wanted to add a little bit. I mean, going along with what Anand said with respect to the regulators. I mean, I think the regulators actually have been quite forward, and I think we would all, as financial institutions, we'd all want more from the regulator. But just as I had pointed out in my little discussion before, again, it takes two hands to clap. Mm-hmm. I think we as financial institutions also have to be a little bit more aggressive, a little bit more progressive from the perspective of how do we do business in a virtual sense. So just take, for example, the regulators have already provided infrastructure or support structure for doing business with individuals, not in person, so virtual or non-in-person business. It's just that, you know, before COVID, we've had the luxury of most people coming into us, and we haven't put a lot of things in place to facilitate it. Of course, doing business not in person is higher risk, so the regulators have asked for more AML details on those clients. And what I think some of us have done is simply said, you know what, let's stay away from that. and let's just make sure that they come in. What COVID has done is that if you don't change into a platform that allows you to do business in the financial industry with the person not being present, you will not survive. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it has now created the impetus to say, okay, taking the structure that the central bank and the regulators have given us, how can I open an account without the person being in front of me? How can I do a loan without the person being in front of me? So it's no longer a question of if we can do it, but how do we do it? And I think that then pushes the envelope, because in answering the question, how do we do it? If you realize that you can't, then I think we can then go back to the regulator and say, listen, we're trying to do this, but these are the areas that we're stopping on. Can we meet halfway down the road so that we can do business and be AML compliant at the same time? So I think we have to push the envelope.
Thank you. Any questions? I see no raised hands. Feel free to unmute and ask a question if you want. If not, I will ask the panelists to wrap up, because we are at 10:28. Going once, going twice. Okay, so I'll start with Elson and with the wrap up and go in reverse order. Elson.
But again, just thanks for being able to share this last hour and a half with everyone. And just reiterate what I said before. I think it will take for us to come out of this smiling. It will take a partnership between companies and their employees, between employees and bankers, between bankers and companies, between everybody and regulators. It's just about sharing the information as much as possible and let everyone understand where you are at this point in time. We as a bank, we're not in the business to repossess. We're not in the business to make a loan bad. So we are in the business to make sure that payments are made eventually at some point in time. So it's that working together that becomes important. And that's it for me. Just be safe. Wash your hands. Keep your hands for your face. Be norm.
And stay home.
Stay home.
Chris.
Thanks, Nigel. Again, well, similar to Elson, I'd like to thank you all for allowing me to participate. I really enjoyed the conversation. And just endorse what was said. It's all about us sharing. We're in this together. We can learn from each other in terms of strategies and techniques dealing with the customers, because every day is a different day when there's a news conference. So we always have to be adaptable and to do things a little differently to protect our membership, to protect our staff. Going forward, there are lessons to be learned. So I don't think it's about, okay, we get over COVID in 2 months or 3 months, whatever, and then we go back to how we used to operate. No, we have to change how we operate, use the technology, use it in a wise, sensible way, keep our members, our customers together with us so they understand how to use the technology and work with the regulators and so on in partnership. So we could recover in terms of the economy of Trinidad and Tobago. That's it for me.
Thank you. Anand?
Yes, I share the sentiments. Thanks to the Institute for giving us the opportunity as a very good session, and I wish you all success going forward. We really want to express solidarity with the public health authorities. Everybody stay home, stay safe. And we're going to come out on the other side of this better, because we're learning new things. Our businesses are going to evolve and adapt, and we're going to come out here with new skills. Mm-hmm. So this situation, in some ways, I think you mentioned it earlier, this situation is temporary. The question is how temporary and what the impacts are likely to be, the ripple effects, the long-term effects that come out of it. So I really want to wish everyone well, be safe, and it's understand the benefits that your individual financial products provide to you, and speak to your advisors, speak to your agents, and see how best it is that you could understand what your insurance product is going to serve you or any other financial product.
Thank you. Roop.
I'd like to just quickly say, I know we're running against the clock. You know, let's begin to focus, and my advice is to begin to focus on the recovery stage. Create a plan ahead team you know, that would, you know, feed into their crisis management team. Now, let's look beyond the crisis and think about recovery. Start developing your financial plans. Begin the conversations with your bankers very, very early. You will need them, and they need you as well as we go mm-hmm. forward. We're in this together. And I'm pretty sure we will be able, you know, with a joint collaborative approach, you know, to come out to the other side of all of this. Thank you very much for the opportunity as well, and stay safe, everyone.
I want to thank all of you for agreeing to participate and to share your perspectives with our members. I think the message is clear. We are in a crisis. This is a serious crisis, and that there are unintended consequences all around. But we are, if we realize that we are in this together, we will get through it. I think the key is to be open and transparent and call your banker. Don't wait to be called. Call your credit union. Call your consumer finance entity. Call your insurance agent. Have the conversation. Raise your hand and ask for help. I think we heard today that the banks, the credit unions, the finance companies, the insurance companies are willing to help. They understand that this is not business as usual. We heard from Donna that, I mean, the perspective on the foreign exchange, and of course in Trinidad and Tobago. So for them, it's COVID and tourism. In Trinidad, it's COVID, tourism, and the oil and gas situation. So again, how do we navigate that? How do we use the technology? How do we move to the new normal in a way that sees us a lot more efficient and a lot more effective after the crisis? So thank you again. Next week, we may want to look at some of the distributed ledger technology and the blockchain technology and how that can help. I see a hand from Shalima. Shalima, you wanted to say something before we wrap up?
Yes, good morning, everyone. I just wanted to say thank you so much for the opportunity to my company for asking me to join the group this morning. And I'd have to endorse everything that you've said and all the others, and particularly to my president, reach out and call us. We're here. Do call your insurance agent. Do ask a question. There are no stupid questions. We are here. That's what we're here for. So, you know, sometimes people want to, you know, they think, I wonder, but they don't really make the call. We are here. We're not hiding. We've not stopped working. Thanks to our company, we've always been a very forward-thinking company. I want to say that working remotely for me is not new. I mean, I've been in the business for a little over 20 years. So, you know, you have to move with the times, especially with the younger generation. They are very open. My thing with my conversation is always at the start when I meet someone new is to ask permission to engage using the different forms of digital communication. And I really have never encountered a negative where that is concerned. So to everyone, thanks for all that you've shared, for your expertise. And I look forward to continue to do what I can to support during this time. Thanks again.
Thank you. Just one thing, Avia or Robbie in Guyana, do you want to say anything? Share with us very quickly what's going on in your neck of the woods. I know you have that election problem that you have to sort out, but what's going on your neck of the woods?
Okay, morning everyone. I saw yesterday, actually, the GRA has removed VAT on some medical supplies and equipment that related to the COVID-19. I saw that they also remove VAT from all utilities, which is owned by the government, that is, as water, light, and there was something else that they removed the value added for.
But
the next,
are your banks or financial institutions helping in any way?
There were banks that wavered, they had a local bank here, the Bank of Trading, Industry and Commerce. I know they have some measures, like they had removed ATM charges, they were advising people to go electronic. But from a Republic Bank perspective, I haven't seen anything much coming out from them, and they have the largest share here. They have put some system in place. They have reduced hours, but things that will actually impact the ordinary people. I haven't seen anything really. To be noted that Guyana is quite a large cash-based economy. There are hardly businesses or even individuals who does electronic transactions. So while most government agency makes payment through bank, that has been a norm for us quite some year because of fraud, payroll fraud. Government has moved largely to electronic. So they pay to the bank. Some private business does that. But what happened? An individual has to go to the bank most times and withdraw the money to go and do the payment because not many business here afford it and have their infrastructure of electronic banking.
So I see, I have
Nigel?
Avia has noted that Scotia has put in place, and I'm sure Roop is going to say that, what Republic has done in Guyana. Go ahead, Roop.
Okay, yeah. So I would want to say, you know, I'm not just Guyana, so it's just a general comment. What we have done in Trinidad, we have done, you know, across all of the territories as well in which we operate. So okay, the same very precise measures we put in Trinidad, both for corporates, SMEs, and individuals, you know, specifically exists as well for Guyana and all of the other territories in which we operate. Over and above that as well, we have announced a $2 million US dollar plan, you know, to assist the governments and each territory as well in dealing with specific issues related to COVID-19 issues, such as, you know, assistance in buying PPE or ventilators or whatever it is as well. So that's separate and apart from what we're doing for customers and for our staff. You know, we have put up as well monies out there to assess each specific country in which we operate.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Well, one thing I would like to remind our panelists here and audience is that largely the preparedness and the interventions and et cetera for this COVID-19 has been hampered by our election crisis, our political crisis.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So everything that happened, people look at it, whether it is a political stunts or if it's, whether it's reactive, proactive in a sense, in one way or the other. So having to deal with this pandemic is one issue, but having a government that is not just an election crisis. We have a government that is considered illegal because of a no confidence motion more than a year ago. Mm-hmm. An election was supposed to call in 3 months. They went to the CCJ. Then from September, the CCJ made a ruling. So from September, 3 months after September, June, the CCJ made a ruling. So by September, we were supposed to have an election within that 3 month frame. So is it your understanding of people here that from September last year, up until now, we have an illegal government because they exhaust that 3 months. Now we have an election that it's mirrored in controversy and it's rigged, and the international community has rejected it completely. The public sector commission and every other international observer, the CARICOM, AOS, Commonwealth, the Carter Center, everyone has refused and rejected the results. So every day we are back and forth in our local courts here, whether to have a recount. Now the courts cleared the way for a recount. I saw they are asking for an audit. An audit, in my opinion, will take another 9 months to do because you basically audited everything that is in the ballot box and not just counting the ballots that is there. So having said all of the election aspect of this thing is consuming the actual preparation of our fight against this COVID. I mean, there's big issue here that the actual testing kits for COVID is under the control, the lock and key control of the minister. Under the minister, then the minister, when a doctor requested that this patient X should be tested, that request has to go to the minister to decide whether or not that should happen. And the minister is not a medical person. Prior to her being the Minister of Health, have never worked in a healthcare facility, does not understand the dynamics of healthcare. So when you see that politicians are observing the whole clinical and medical aspect of this pandemic, it is very worrying and frightening here for us.
Right. Well,
and let's not talk about all the challenges
you have an additional challenge in addition to COVID-19. Unfortunately, it's hampering your response. So we will have to we wish you well as you navigate that, and as you see the banks are willing to help. So I hope you can get that across to the directors and boards in Guyana.
What I must say, while there are many who wishes to help, in our political climate and a government that is considered illegal and unconstitutional, we can get help as we need. We request money from the World Bank and they are refusing. Request money from the IDB and they are refusing. Going to the local, CDB said they were going to give some money. I'm not too sure if Guyana is in it, which is a Caribbean Development Bank. Our local bank, does the government has that legality to go to any financial organization and take a loan? Ask, that's some of our challenges here.
Yep. But we can't deal with that on this call, so we'll deal with that.
I know.
Another time. Kamla, you want to wrap up again? Thank you guys for participating and for all the participants. I hope we were able to provide some invaluable information. Kamla?
Yes. Thank you very much, Nigel. I really want to thank everyone who has been part of today's sessions. Our panelists, thank you so much, including Donna, who left us. We've really tried to make sure that we reach out to the region and include them in our dialogue so that this level of cooperation is moving throughout the region. And, you know, thank you to Crystal in particular for her question. Just to let you guys know, we do have weekly sessions here at CCGI. In fact, next week, Wednesday, we'd be looking at risk management and cybersecurity. So make sure to tune in with us. I also would like to invite all of you to register for part 4 of the governance response to COVID-19, where we will focus on the impact on people and employees. So that's tomorrow from 10 a.m. Our panelists tomorrow will be Dexter Emmerich, Delia Joseph, Bernard Mitchell, and Lara Quantrell-Thomas. So I expect that to be another really, really good session like today. Our online sessions are on the Zoom platform. Tomorrow, all our Thursday sessions are free to members. So those of you who are considering becoming a member, we welcome you because we are trying to provide support to all of you. Those of you who are not yet members, the Thursday sessions at a very minimal price of 100 TT or 15 US dollars if you're across the region. So we will be reaching out to all of you to ensure that we continue to provide a forum where we can share valuable information to help us through this crisis. Thank you all very much, and we will see you tomorrow.
Take care, all. Be safe.
Okay, bye now.
Goodbye.
Okay, bye.